Mark Anthony, of course, so gracious to stick around to take a final hour of phone calls with you, which we'll get right into on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Mark Anthony with us. We're going to take your phone calls with him this final hour with him. Devil, evil spirits, hell. Do you believe in heaven and hell? Mark, you with us?
Yeah.
There you go.
I wasn't sure if that was for me or for the listeners. Do I believe in heaven and hell? I believe that there are levels to the other side, different dimensions. The higher frequencies, the higher amplitudes would be those closer into the light and those which are directly connected to God. I mean, everyone and everything in creation and then some is connected to God. And then there are lower levels which are farther from the light, which are separated from God. And the spirits that go into those levels, they're not happy about it. They have to atone for the things that they did when they were here. They have to reflect on it, and there's a desire for them to emerge from the darkness by doing positive things. And no matter what you do in this life, it's going to come back on you. So even though our human world system of justice may all too often be a colossal failure, God's system of justice, the true balance of the universe, which is karma, you cannot escape from that. So,
not at all.
No, not at all.
Let's go to Shelley, Newport, Kentucky, east of the Rockies. Hey, Shelley, thanks for holding so long.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, let's see. I was upstairs going through some things that I wanted to thin down my possessions. I just wanted to give some things away. And I noticed there were certain objects that had just vanished that I really liked. And anyway, the most of which was my mother's wedding ring. And
you mean just it's gone?
Yeah, I can't find it anywhere. But we went down in the basement, a friend of mine and I, and took photographs, and there's all kinds of large white orbs in the basement. And this thing, whatever it was, when I first noticed things missing, it was bracelets. I don't have expensive jewelry, but just bracelets that I liked. And I said to my friend, you know, my bracelets are gone. And he said, no, I saw one hanging up on the cabinet. And I said, no, I wouldn't do that. And we went upstairs, and sure enough, there was this horrible, horrible-looking bracelet I've never seen in my life. So something put that there.
And took the other stuff.
And took the other stuff. And I, you know, no one could have just gone in and taken anything.
Have you ever heard of this disappearing object phenomenon, Mark?
You know, in my book, Never Letting Go, I do discuss things like that. I've seen in my own experience objects that were supposed to be in one filing cabinet or in one drawer, not there, and then I found it on the other side of the house, and there's no way it could have gotten there. So I myself have experienced that. In Never Letting Go, I write about Billy, one of my clients. I'm not going to give away the story because it's a really good story, but it's kind of a funny story too, and it's also a very heartwarming story about objects that appear with no logical reason how they got there. You know, I'm as much of a skeptic as anybody else because that's why I insist upon evidence. And for those people who are interested in readings with me to find out more about these type of things that are going on with them, you know, my website, neverlettinggo.com, will show you how to sign up for a reading. But I always keep an open mind to this, and I believe in exploring every possibility. Now, there's two ways of looking at this. It's Shelley, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There's two ways of looking at this. Number one, that this is a negative thing, or number two, that, oh, my gosh, I'm actually being visited by people from the other side. And the fact that this being seemed to focus on the mother's wedding ring, for all we know, this could be a sign from her mother. So before we interpret it as something negative, we have to keep an open mind.
What about the phenomena, Mark, of, you know, like your keys, you put them on the table, and you can't find them. And you look there, and you know you didn't move them. And then you walk around the room, and then you come back, and there they are again, right where you put them.
Yeah, I've had things like that happen to me, and they're like, but I looked there 20 times, and you wonder, what is that? It very well could be, it could be spirits doing this. I mean, you know, once again, we can't jump to the paranormal explanation. We have to, what was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle? Remove the impossible, then you have the solution, no matter how improbable.
That's true.
And sometimes the solution is one which is outside of the material world.
Well, you know, is it possible physically that the eyes somehow erase what you're seeing, even though they're there physically? But I mean, I have had this happen to me where I'm touching where I put them, and I don't feel the keys. So it's not like they're still there and you can't see them, you know, like you might have some kind of syndrome or something.
Well, that's one possibility. The other possibility is I know that spirits can direct our attention to things. A lot of times I hear people say that, you know, after, you know, my spouse died, I keep finding pennies everywhere. Now, are the spirits materializing pennies or are they directing your attention to pennies? And maybe, George, this is a theory I'm just throwing out there. Maybe they can do the same thing in a situation like maybe they can mask it or direct our attention away from it at that time. You know, a lot of people look at spirit intervention as some type of negative thing. That's where we're all jumping into the arms of evil spirits. But then again, their dimension intersects ours. So this is not some alien invasion from another realm. This is the way it is. And we have to keep an open mind that spirit phenomenon, spirit contact, it has been documented since ancient times. I mean, from the ancient Egyptians, the ancient Chinese, the Indians, all the way up. I mean, when you look at saints and angels and Christians that talk about, I mean, even President George W. Bush explained an experience where he got hit by a white light, and that was his born-again experience.
Yeah, his epiphany, huh?
His epiphany. So these things are not unusual, yet we tend to scoff at them. I mean, you and I don't because, you know, we exist in a world where the paranormal isn't paranormal, it's normal. But a lot of people have spiritual experiences, they're surrounded by them, yet they tend to shove them away because, once again, fear of the unknown.
Let's go to Roy Washington. Tony's with us now. Tony, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks, George. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Tony.
I have a quick comment and then my quick question because sure. Other people want to talk. Okay, in the Bible, it talks about the devil is the prince of the air. Now, my comment, I'll let you answer the question, but my comment about that is I'm kind of like you in a way that some of the Bible I look at differently in that these UFOs and aliens, some part of me thinks that they could be demonic entities because anything abducting you at 3 o'clock in the morning to give you a probe is not my friend. And so
no.
I just want to get your take on what you think it means by the devil is the prince of the air. Thanks, George. You're the best.
Okay.
I'll take it off the air.
You got it.
Actually, I think that's a fascinating quote. I don't look at aliens as being demonic. And it's interesting. I was watching, I was talking to some people that claim to have been alien abductees one time, and they told me about, you know, the things they went through. And I thought it was really fascinating. And then I went home, and I was watching the Discovery Channel. And the guys on the Discovery Channel, they wanted to examine a polar bear. So they shot it with a tranquilizer, and then it collapsed. And they went up, and they started taking blood samples and all this. And I'm looking at that going, holy smoke. So if you think about it, if an alien intelligence came to this world, you know, people say, oh, they want to contact us, but why would they? We're dangerous. We fight among ourselves. We have weapons of mass destruction that we will use and do use on each other. We probably would offer nothing to them in an intellectual sense. So them examining us would be akin to people examining a bear or a monkey by drugging it, taking samples and probing it. So I don't necessarily think that the alien intelligence is evil or negative. It's just that they look at us with about as much fascination as we would a pile of ants organized yet violent.
Let's talk a little bit more about your mediumship, Mark. This started, you think, when you were born, or did you develop it later?
When I was about 4 years old, it started to emerge. I started having invisible friends that I would talk to. A lot of my colleagues that are mediums talk about horrific childhoods where they're considered insane and they're vilified for it. But since both of my parents were mediums, it was not looked at as weird. My dad sat me down, and he said to me when I was about five, he goes, "Do not talk about this, because people that see things that aren't there or that other people can't see are considered insane." And in Never Letting Go, and in the new book, I explain this a lot more in the chapter on the genetic, the hereditary ability of psychic ability and mediumistic ability. His sister, who was a very gifted psychic medium, in the early 1950s, she could foresee the future, and she could also detect the presence of spirits. And one day her husband was going to go to work, and she prevented him from going. She started having a fit. She goes, "Something terrible is going to happen, terrible, terrible, terrible." And he's like, "All right." And he was a religious fundamentalist, and he thought that everything she did was evil. Well, he worked at a machine shop at a steel plant in Pennsylvania, and a crane was lifting thousands of pounds of steel beams. Oh. The crane snapped, and it flattened the machine shop like a pancake, killing everybody there. Had he been at work, in all probability, like 99% probability, he would have been in the machine shop. You would think he would have repaid that with kindness. Instead, he felt it was the work of demons. He had her committed to a mental institution.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and she was subjected to electroshock therapy, which, you know, even though they still do ECT, not like they did back then, they fried this woman's brain. And she was there for 6 months, subjected to cold water treatments and then electroshock. And at the end of that 6 months, she was a shadow of what she had once been. Terrible, terrible tragedy. Psychics and mediums have been persecuted for centuries. I don't want to belabor the point, but George, you're Catholic, and a lot of our listeners are Catholic, and even for those who aren't, if 500-600 years ago, if someone like me was walking around a village in medieval Europe and I said, "I see dead people," you got burned at the stake for witchcraft. If you join the clergy and you said you were receiving visions of the Holy Spirit, you were declared a saint. And a lot of the popular saints in Catholic religion and even in Hinduism and in other faiths exhibited what we now consider to be psychic and mediumistic abilities. Back then, they referred to it as gifts of the Holy Spirit or the gift of second sight. Unless you were not clergy-oriented. Like, look at Joan of Arc, burned at the stake for, quote-unquote, hearing voices, whereas a century before her, St. Clair of Assisi, who was essentially a remote viewer because she could see things in real time that were happening across the village and the country, she was declared a saint because of her visions of the Holy Spirit. Interestingly enough, in 1958, Pope Pius XII declared St. Clair of Assisi the patron saint of television, even though she had lived 800 years before the invention of television.
Go figure. Well, let's go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Pete's with us. Pete, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
Mark, you're being very humble. I've you some people.
Go ahead.
Some even have said, compared to you, if the Son of God came back, it would be Mark Anthony. Now, I'm wondering, if your way of life is accepted, are you prepared to lead the people properly?
Well, first off, I mean, I don't even know how to respond to that one. Thank you for the vote of confidence, but I do not see myself as a prophet or a demigod. I see myself as a man with a gift, a service gift that I use in the service of humanity, as we all should. But thank you for the beautiful compliment. I don't seek to lead anyone. I don't seek to prove anything. All I do is open the door for people. It is up to them whether or not to go through it.
You're still practicing law, or are you doing the mediumship full time?
The demand for me as a medium has become so intense that I'm booked up, immensely with public appearances and tours and television engagements that right now I serve on a consulting basis for law firms because a lot of them want my insights because, you know, this is a calling. As a child, I wanted to be a priest because the draw to the spiritual, I decided to go to law school instead. And it's funny because when God calls you, you're going to go. And I suppose my ministry was to act as an attorney for some years, and the appeal and the calling to help people understand that life is truly everlasting, which manifests itself through my ability to communicate with the other side, that's where I'm at now.
You're not scared of the other side, are you?
Not at all. Not at all. Now, I have encountered the spirits of serial killers, not pleasant. I've encountered fairies and sprites and things like that. Or, I mean, you can put whatever label you want on it. You know, they don't look like the Lucky Charms guy, you know, or Tinkerbell. But I don't fear the other side. I look at it as fascinating, and I approach it with reverence. Before I engage in spirit contact, I meditate, I pray, I ask God to send forth the white light. I believe in angels. And I approach it from strictly a reverential standpoint as if it were a sacrament. I know there's a lot of people say, you know, it's the work of demons and blah, blah, blah. You know, but once again, that's, you know, getting into backward, primitive, fear-based, superstitious nonsense.
What about energy? What's out there in the universe that you would call pure energy?
God. God is pure energy. Albert Einstein said that we are all beings of light. We are energetic beings having a temporary material world existence. If you think of our body as a bottle, our spirit is the universal internal energy within it, and our brain is the cork in the bottle. We are specifically sent into a human incarnation to experience a finite set of circumstances and experiences. And when we die, the mind dies. Who and what we are lives on in eternity. So when the mind is no longer, the inhibitor between this side and the other side, we revert to our eternal state. It's like a drop of water. We're a unique drop of water, and then we fall back into this eternal collective consciousness known as the other side, which has a myriad of levels and frequencies and differences to it. Yet we are able to disconnect from that collective consciousness in order to communicate with those here in the material world. In my work, I found that spirits are just as excited to talk to us as we are to them. And when they feel us suffering with pain and grief, they want to reach out from the other side to let us know that they do exist. My message, which I explain in my book, Never Letting Go, and on my website, neverlettinggo.com, and in my new book, which will be coming out, is that God exists, heaven exists. Our soul is an immortal living spirit. We can communicate with those souls. And when it's our time to leave the material world, we will see our loved ones again.
And that's a good thing. We're going to come back with final calls for Mark Anthony in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'll have open lines for you next hour. And by the way, it's time for our shout out to those of you listening to Coast on our more than 570 radio stations across North America. Hello and thank you, Coast Insiders. And then the various chat rooms and groups out there, Into Infinity, Fantastic Form 2, Imaginative Worlds. Thank you for all you do. Sorcery IRC, a new group, Omega Point Chronicles. Hello there. And thanks for joining us. And then those who follow us and like us on Facebook and Twitter, Yahoo Chat, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters. We just had Kane Hodder on just a few days ago, the National Radio Club. And our buddy Greg the Cook in St. Louis, thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Mark Anthony with us. Let's go right back to the phones. Let's go to JP in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, JP, how are you?
Good morning, George. Good morning, Mark. I love the show. I got two quick comments. I want to hear what you thought about it. But first, I would like to see if your listeners would. I have a friend who's battling cancer. His name's Carmen. I was going to see if your listeners would send out a prayer for him.
We sure will.
And the two quick comments is, you know, we're talking about spiritual in the Bible and that, you know, if you use logic, there's a lot of logic in the Bible. One thing is that, you know, Jesus said he was the only way. And if there was any other way, then it wouldn't be. He wouldn't make no sense for him to come down and die on the cross. The other point is that Newsweek or Time about a couple years ago came out with a whole magazine that had to dealt with Jesus. Did he do this? Did he do these miracles and so forth? And they ended the entire magazine with this point that Bethany was the name of Bethany, that town Bethany, where Lazarus arose, it's according to the Bible, 4,000 years ago or so, it was named another name. Well, they changed the name 2,000 years ago, all the records show, and the translation is Bethany. But what the new name is where Lazarus arose. So they're saying that you wouldn't change the name of a town like that. It's a lot of work changing the signs and so forth, unless it was for a really big reason. And the logic says that they named the name of the town in the old and the new old language is where Lazarus arose, and they wouldn't have changed the name of the town had not everyone known that to be a fact.
What do you think of that, Mark?
I think that's fascinating. The Bible is full of a lot of logic, and one of the things, since we're talking about demon stuff tonight, is the Book of Revelations. And Revelations gets a lot of people, you know, unnerved because it talks about the Antichrist. And in Revelations 13, verse 18, this calls for wisdom. Let the person who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666.
Oh, yes.
A lot of people wonder, well, you know, when's the Antichrist coming? Who is he? It was the Apostle John who wrote Revelations. And he probably wrote it about 30 years after Jesus died, around maybe 60 A.D. And the Emperor Nero fits the profile of the beast so very well. And so where's the 666 come to? Well, when John was writing and he would communicate to other Christians, the Christians were a secret society at this time.
They had to be.
And Nero was like the worst of the persecutors. And a lot of that was because Christians were an outgroup, and Nero was always in need of cash, being the emperor of Rome. And so he would accuse people of being Christians so he could seize their assets. But it was even more than that. What John used to do is he used a puzzle called gematria, in which Hebrew characters that he used in his writings corresponded to numbers. In other words, he was using a secret code. Makes a lot of sense. And Neron Caesar, which would be sort of an inadvertent Hebrew way of saying Nero Caesar, translated in its numerical value to 666. So that way the Christians could communicate with each other, and when they talked about Nero, they used a numerical code. Now, does Nero fit the description of the beast? The beast was looked at not only as Nero the person, but as the Roman emperor. And according to the Roman historian Suetonius, Nero had his mother murdered, his brother, his aunt, most of his family, a lot of people close to him. He was a psychopath.
He was insane, truly insane.
He was horrible. He married two young boys, had one of them castrated. He used to have Christians nailed to crosses and then lit on fire as to light up the night in Rome. He would do some really perverted things, where he would dress up in the skins of a wild animal, and then they'd let him loose in the arena. You know, this is before the Colosseum was built, but they had arenas. And there would be women and men tied to stakes, and he would go up and attack their genitalia. I mean, this guy was completely out of his mind. And then when they talk about, you know, no one could buy or sell without the mark of the beast, well, when the Jews revolted against Nero in AD 66, interesting, 6 and 6 again, they began to stamp their own money because Roman imperial coins were a symbol of Roman imperial power, plus they had the emperor's image on it. Jews to this day do not believe in idolatry, in other words, a human figure of God, nor do Muslims, and early Christians didn't either. At least in the very first century. So basically, The mark of the beast is no one could buy or sell without using the money of the beast, the Roman imperial money. And finally, in Revelations 13:10 and in 14, it says, the beast slays by the sword and will die by the sword. Nero committed suicide by stabbing himself because it wasn't just Christians that were fed up with him. The Roman army had had enough of him, and they were marching on Rome, and so he stabbed himself. So let's look at the early Christians. Here we are, 1st century AD, and they're talking about the Antichrist, and John is communicating to other Christians. I mean, you know, Peter was crucified, hung upside down. Paul was beheaded during the reign of Nero. Christians are being thrown to wild animals, being eaten by lions in gladiatorial.
And he died, John. He died at the age of 30, I think.
Yeah, he died. He reigned 14 years. You can only wonder why did they put up with him for so long?
Yeah.
Because he threw a lot of parties, a lot of gladiatorial displays. It was the circus and bread. So to the early Christians, who was the Antichrist? Some nebulous figure thousands of years in the future, or the sexually depraved, genocidal psychopath who was having them burned alive and fed to wild animals? It's pretty clear to most biblical scholars, and while I don't consider myself a biblical scholar per se, but I've been studying archaeology and history and religion most of my life, that Nero was the Antichrist, and his number was 666.
He could be. Of course, do you think there is a Antichrist now around?
Well, all you have to do is turn on the news.
Because I think there could be many. Yeah. They're all out there.
There's a lot of people who when money becomes the master instead of the servant, you're on the path to becoming evil. The Bible actually says the love of money is the root of all evil. I understand Mark Twain said the lack of money is the root of all evil. And that makes a lot of sense, because if you are satisfied with your financial status in life, whether you're poor or wealthy, okay, and don't crave and seek and worship and love money, then you're not going to do evil things. If you perceive that you don't have enough money, like people who rob innocent victims for money to buy drugs, or just because, you know, they're low-life dirt bags, or someone like a Bernie Madoff who has insatiable lust for money, that no amount of money is enough. These lead to evil behaviors. If you look at, you know, things that terrorists do, yes, maybe they're all ticked off about U.S. foreign policy, but a lot of it comes down to domination control, and domination control is inevitably tied into money. So there's a lot there that when money becomes the master, as opposed to being the servant, this is one of the paths to evil.
We go to Ashley now in Maryland. Hey, Ashley, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Great, Ashley. Thank you.
I wanted to ask your guest, you obviously have a concept and belief in both, like, extraterrestrials and the whole spirit world. Does it, and you're obviously a Christian, does it bother you that people are starting to, like, conceptualize God in a way maybe with extraterrestrials, and do you in any way associate the two?
What, with God, with as extraterrestrials?
As an ET, yeah.
No, I believe that extraterrestrials are beings that may be unlike ourselves or like ourselves. I mean, until I see them or meet them, I'm keeping an open mind. But when you talk to astronauts, and I have, because I live near the Space Center and I have friends that are space scientists, and to listen to an astronaut talk about going on a spacewalk, and, you know, when we look at the sky at night, yeah, we see a lot of stars, but when they're looking at it and they're not seeing the atmosphere, they said it is so immense, because the idea that we're the only planet that can support life is ludicrous. But what I look as God is so far beyond our ability to understand while we exist in our finite material world state. But my understanding, based on my work and on my faith, is that God is the size of, is the source of all light, love, power, healing, creation, energy, vibration. Everything in the universe is connected to God. God is connected to everything. God transcends time, space, distance, and is a multi, or the multi-dimensional being. We can't even begin to understand what God is.
And on the other hand, it is so simple to understand what God is, because when you feel true love in your heart, I don't mean lust and sick, weird, psychopathic, stalky love, but the true love. When you look at someone in the eyes who loves you back, and you catch that glimpse of love, then you are looking into the face of God.
All right, let's go to Gary in Sacramento, California. Gary, you're on with Mark Anthony on Coast to Coast.
Yes, Mark.
Hi there.
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
It's an honor to board the bridge, gentlemen. What you just said is exactly what I believe, and I thank you for speaking with the world of the University of the Universe. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think about the Gnostic Gospels? You know, what was discovered in Nag Hammadi, Egypt there, and... you know, that actually dates back to the first 55 years A.D. How you feel about that, and what do you think about channelings like Course in Miracles, or another great one is The Way of Mastery, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Right, let's talk about channeling first, Mark. What do you think of that?
Well, channeling, I discussed it earlier, but I'll be happy to talk about it again. Channeling is where there's three different types of mediumship. Mental mediumship, which is the type of mediumship that I do, where I will be able to communicate with your loved ones and or whoever other spirits come through that are associated with you. Physical mediumship, which is ectoplasmic materialization. That George, that's a whole other show.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure is.
And then there's channeling, which is where you open up to let a spirit superimpose his or her energy over you. Edgar Cayce, for example, the so-called sleeping prophet, was a channeler. I believe that in the Bible, the Pentecost, after Jesus had ascended to heaven, when the disciples, including his mother Mary, were together and they began to see the tongues of fire which appeared above their head. For those of us who do energy work and aura work, you have to realize that the people that wrote this were describing it in terms of first century AD. So they were channeling a very high energy frequency, very high amplitude, which we would call the Holy Spirit. Okay, and that's where the disciples kicked up their cosmic consciousness to interfacing with the Christ consciousness. And the crown chakra, there's seven energy centers or seven main energy centers in our body, and the one at the top of the head is the crown chakra and is associated with the color of violet. It as energy flickers and flows, it would look like a flame. So naturally, people would refer to that as a flame. So I have no problem believing in channeling, and I have no problem believing in miracles, and that there are people who are vessels of the power of God, which flows through them from God, not from them, and they are not God, but it flows through them from God to heal. So I do believe that.
The Gnostic Nag Hammadi Library, of course, was 13 ancient codices, containing over 50 texts, and it was discovered in Egypt in 1945, right?
Yes, and the Gnostic Gospels are fascinating. A lot of people say, well, they reject them. I'll just stick with the original, which are the King James Version of the Bible. You know, the Bible has gone through so many incarnations over the centuries, and the Gnostic Gospels, I think, are totally worth studying, and that there's a lot of wisdom in them. I understand that it was the Roman Emperor Constantine in, let's say, around the year 300, give or take a few years, who said, all right, the Roman Empire is basically Christian. We need an authoritative text. Now write it. So all the bishops of Alexandria, from Alexandria and from the eastern part of the empire and then from the western part of the empire, convened at the Council of Nicaea, and it took them several years to compile all of the writings that they had at their disposal. Now, why the Gnostic Gospels didn't make the cut, I don't know. Maybe they didn't know about them. Maybe there were reasons why they weren't put there. But that was the first version of the Bible, which was altered for several times over the next 1,500 years.
Let's go now to Louis in Aurora, Colorado, west of the Rockies. Louis, go ahead. Welcome.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, Louis.
Hey, I got a lot to say about the Gnostics. First of all, you know, the major aspect of Gnosticism is the fact that God put consciousness into us. And consciousness is the major aspect of what we are. We're animals, but we have a godlike consciousness in us. And my second part that I really wanted to talk about was the orb sightings. Having witnessed them twice, I really believe with, I'm sorry, I'm throwing a lot of this out because I know I only have so much time with you guys. But space travel itself, no matter what kind of being, extraterrestrial, human, it's a very traumatic experience to the physical body. So any sort of sighting, and I realized with these probe sightings, the orb sightings, that these are like probes. Just as we're sending to Mars in our most basic sense at our technology at this point, these are probably beings that are sending probes to our planet as well. And I want to throw that out real quick. But the Gnosticism part, I just caught on to in your conversation, and I really wanted to, you know, discuss this because, I really believe that the story of King David in the Bible, King David was an adulterer, a murderer, a thief, and God told him and granted him so many blessings and told him that he was a man after his own heart.
Well, he did indeed. Look, we're out of time. Mark, I want to thank you for spending the 3 hours with us. Really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you, George. I really appreciate it. I love the work that you're doing. I love Coast to Coast AM, and I want to thank you, Lisa, the whole staff, Stephanie, and I want to thank all the listeners for Coast to Coast AM. Anyone interested in a reading with me or finding more about my book, please visit my website, neverlettinggo.com.
Super. Thank you, Mark. I'm going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Open Lines.